views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Voices of Women is a top radio show that gives voice to the personal stories of women. It will inspire women and enlighten men to follow their dreams and create positive changes in their lives. Whether the audience listens to best-selling authors or a layperson like themselves, they'll realize there are others with similar experiences and feelings to their own. This show will give women tools they can use every day, which will empower them to step out of their boxes and create the changes they desire in their life. Chris inspires women to find their voices, speak up, and become leaders of their own life. Everyone has their gifts to share with the world, and it's time for women to work together to bring honor and respect to the feminine voice, which is within all people, men and women. Topics include personal growth, spirituality, creativity, leadership, and divine feminine. Now here's your host, Chris Stainis.
Welcome to Voices of Women. I'm Chris Stainis, and today I have the pleasure of speaking with Starhawk. Starhawk is an author, activist, permaculture designer, and teacher, and directs the Earth Activist Training. She teaches Earth-based spirituality, tools for ritual, and skills of activism internationally, and she is the author of the classics The Spiral Dance and The Fifth Sacred Thing. Her latest book is The Empowerment Manual, A Guide for Collaborative Groups, and coming this winter is the sequel to The Fifth Sacred Thing, City of Refuge. And she's going to be in Seattle the weekend, November 6th through the 8th. She'll be at East West Bookshop on Friday night. You can find out all about that at eastwestbookshop.com. And she's given a workshop Saturday and Sunday through the toolsforchange.org. And also she's going to lead a spiral dance with Women of Wisdom at the North Seattle College. And that is Saturday, November 7th. And you can find out about that at our womenofwisdom.org website. So you can read all about Starhawk on her website at www.starhawk.org. So welcome, Starhawk.
Hi. Great to be on your show again, Chris.
Yeah, so it's good to talk to you again, and we're excited that you're coming to Seattle. And your workshop, I want to talk about, you know, your topic that you are giving on your workshop, because it's an interesting one and a powerful one, because it's around myths and stories. So let's talk about myths and the importance of myths in our world today.
Yeah, I think when people hear the word myth, they think, oh, something ancient from Greek times or before. But really, I think when I think of myth, I think of what are the core stories, what are the deep narratives of our time that are so embedded in us, we're often not even consciously aware of what they are. And I guess, you know, as a writer, as a priestess, as a witch, as someone who practices magic, I've always been very attuned to the power of stories and the power of the words, because I think so deeply stories shape our perception, our understanding of the world.
And stories are, you know, that's so much part of Woman of Wisdom. When women come together, it's a place where we can share our stories. And then there's so much, what I find, there's a lot of healing in that. What is your experience when people are, when we're telling our stories?
Well, one of the deepest experiences I've had, you know, has come with doing rites of passage for young women. You know, when I grew up in the 50s, first of all, there were very few stories of women being powerful, women having agency, women actually acting in the world. You know, there were a few. It was Marie Curie and Eleanor Roosevelt, right? But there weren't action heroes, and even the kind things that we see today with some of the stories for young women, the actors, the adventurers, the people who did the exciting things were almost all men. At the same time, there were very few rituals or ceremonies that actually celebrated changes in women's lives. not in conventional, you know, U.S. American culture. I grew up Jewish, so when I was 13, I did have a bat mitzvah, and in my era, at least girls got to have a bat mitzvah, the conventional rite of passage. In my mother's day, she was always very angry and upset that her brothers got to have a bar mitzvah, and she didn't. But the ritual itself was not anything at all about a woman's life, a woman's reality, you know, coming into your womanhood, menstruating, none of that was part of it. It was very much a male ritual that girls were just now allowed to do. So we do first blood rituals for our young girls where they begin to menstruate. We take them up to a hill and tie their hands together, and they run together as fast as the mother can run. We tie their hands to their mother's hands. They run together. And when the mother can't run any further, we cut them apart and let the girl run on alone. And then we go back somewhere and spend the day telling her our stories of our first blood and, you know, just all the women's mysteries. And the thing is that even though many of us, my generation, kind of really carry a deep wound of not having these changes of knowledge, there's something about just telling those stories, no matter how painful they are, that is very powerful and very healing. Because in telling them, they become part of women's history. They become part of a legacy that we're now passing down to our daughters and our granddaughters so that they can do something differently.
Yeah, it's so important. And it's that passing that information down. And we grow up, but when we don't have that, we don't have our mothers' and our grandmothers' stories, we grow up with, you know, assumptions and made-up things. You know, we don't have a true picture of what becoming a woman is. We learn about it through rumors or stories that aren't true, you know, that perpetuates the shame around it.
Yes, if we don't mark something with ritual or ceremony or story, then it's like saying either it's just not important, it doesn't really exist, or it's shameful, it's something that needs to be hidden. Yeah, I was on a panel I attended a panel at the Parliament of the World's Religions this past weekend in Salt Lake City, which is this amazing gathering of people from all over the world talking about interfaith and collaboration and cooperation among religions. And there was a very beautiful Diné woman, Pat McCabe, Woman Stands Shining, her name, and she was talking about her tradition, what we call the Navajo tradition. And she was saying when a young girl begins to menstruate in their tradition, the whole community comes to a halt for 4 days, and they have this amazing ritual, this celebration that they do. And I thought, you know, what a powerful affirmation that would be as a girl to have everything stop for you at that age. Everybody focus on you, and to share the celebration of this amazing change that's happening.
And what you're talking about is that, you know, that support, you know, and we're supporting the transformation on a young mm-hmm. girl's level, and it happens at all ages too. And so let's talk about too how, I mean, one of the things that you work on is and being an activist for, you know, the permaculture and climate change. And so how do this tie into those issues?
Well, I think that there are some very powerful underlying stories about climate change that we need to look at. You know, when we think about why is it so hard for us to address climate change, I think part of the reason is that it challenges a very core story in our culture, and that story goes something like this. You know, people in former days were at the mercy of natural forces that they were too ignorant to understand. But now we've transcended all of that, and now we are in charge, and we are in control of the natural world, and we are constantly making progress. And that's the story. In some sense, you know, I grew up that story, never directly expressed. Nobody ever said, this is the guiding myth of our civilization. But it was so endemic in everything we did, thought, or all the decisions that we made, that it just really, really went unchallenged. And I think the thing about deep myth is because they're so embedded, it's really hard to challenge them because you first have to make them visible. You have to make them conscious. And the thing about climate change is it really counters that story. It says, actually, nature bats last. You know, actually, we're not in control. Actually, we're not in charge. Actually, we don't know what we're doing. And that's a hard pill, I think, for the general culture to swallow. We like to think that we're in control and that we know what we're doing, or that if we don't, somebody does. And I think more and more we're feeling this overall social distress on every level because it becomes more and more clear every day, not just around climate change, but around so many factors, that we don't know what we're doing and neither does anybody else. Now, from the goddess perspective, from the earth-based spiritual perspective, we can embrace that. We say, yeah, we don't know what we're doing. We are constantly encountering mystery. The great mysteries of life are actually the most common things, birth and growth and change and the way that things decay and regenerate. And if we can actually embrace that, if we can approach that with some humility, and humility comes from the same root as humus, and actually the root of human means getting close to the earth, not thinking you're the center and above everything. Then we actually have tremendous allies for addressing climate change, for addressing all of the ills in our culture.
Yeah, that's great, and I love that analogy of And we're going to take a break right now. You're listening to Voices of Women. We'll come right back and talk more with Starhawk.
The dawn is breaking.
Hi, I'm Tim Darter.
And I'm Steve Kramer.
Join us on Spirit Fire Radio. Discover how to add the mechanics of meditation to your day.
And watch yourself connect in a whole new way. Find the amazing moments in life's routines that often pass us by. Add to your awareness with Spirit Fire Radio.
Tune in each Wednesday at 9 a.m. for your weekly guide to practical mindfulness. And to learn more, visit www.spiritfireradio.com.
My dream is to end homelessness.
My passion is living a green life.
My dream is to end poverty.
My passion is volunteering.
My passion is making a difference.
My dream is to cure Lyme disease.
My passion is rebuilding communities.
My passion is helping those in need.
My passion is caring for the elderly.
My dream is to find a cure for cancer.
My dream is to leave a better world for my children.
We all have that special passion, that lifelong dream that drives us to live our lives with meaning and to create a better world. No matter what drives you, we can all make an impact. Dr. Pat Basile is helping others make their dreams come true so we can all help make our world a better world.
To learn more about how Dr. Pat is building a community of sharing hope, strength, funds, knowledge, and information, visit abetterworldcrowdfunding.com today. That's abetterworldcrowdfunding.com.
Thank you. Do you want to transform your life's trauma and challenges into the gift that your life was meant to be? It's time for you to take control of your soul journey to heal, grow, and shine. Manifest your destiny with Wendy Wolf, Soul Transformer, Energy, and Psychic Healer. To start your soul journey, contact Wendy at healgrowshine.com or email Wendy at wendy@wendyrwolf.com and start your adventure today.
How would you like increased health and vitality? How would you like to avoid the onset of disease as well as slow the aging process? This is all possible through a simple, safe, and natural process. Every day, we are either moving toward wellness or away from wellness.
Hi, I'm Mary Jane Mack. I'd like to be your partner in achieving optimal health. Contact me now at MaryJaneMack.com or call 425-392-0659. Visit MaryJaneMack.com. Yeah.
Welcome back to Voices of Women. I'm Chris Danis, and I'm here with Starhawk. We've been talking about climate change, and Starhawk, you were just talking about, you know, some of the goddess traditions and how, you know, in that tradition we really embrace the earth and the earth spirituality and you know, that mystery. So let's talk a little bit more about that from your perspective. You've worked so many years in that arena.
Again, I go back to thinking about climate change and thinking about, why is it so hard for us to deal with it? And I think the other myth that comes into play is through the myth of apocalypse, the myth of the end time. Once you embrace the idea that the climate is changing, that we are really disrupting things on that level, then you sort of go straight into this deep underlying cultural pattern that says life is a linear progression. The world is a linear progression, and there's a big bang at the end of it, whether that's apocalypse or Ragnarok or something, but the world is coming to an end and into a deep, deep feeling of doom. And earth-based spirituality, religions, talk about cycles and great changes, but there's a sense in that life is not just a linear progression, it's a circle, it's a cycle made of many cycles. Right now we're at the cycle of moving into autumn and winter. We have celebrations that honor those seasonal cycles, like Samhain that we're coming up to, Halloween, that is called in the secular world, where we honor the ancestors and we honor the beloved dead, and we embrace that part of the cycle that takes us into death and say, this isn't something we have to be terrified of. This is a natural part of life. So when we look at climate change through that lens, we can say, well, this might not have to be the end of everything. Not the moment to throw up your hands and cry doom. This might be part of a cycle of growth and regeneration. Because in earth-based spirituality, death always leads to some form of regeneration. So where's the potential regeneration? You know, what's the story we could tell about that? And the story I like to tell about climate change really is it's not just about carbon in the atmosphere. It's about massive ecosystem breakdown and degeneration. And when we say ecosystem, we're not just talking about plants. We're talking about human systems, social systems, political, economic systems. See, all of those breaking down around us. And decay leads to regeneration. So the counter to climate change has to be massive ecosystem regeneration, including massive human ecosystem regeneration. And the good news about that is we know how to do that. We can do that. We can do that on a large scale. We can do that really amazingly quickly. very, very simple ways, which is kind of why I am excited about permaculture and agroforestry, agroecology, and so many of these disciplines that show us that we can do that on the landscape. And that means what we have to do is we also have to do it on the human landscape. So maybe we could be telling ourselves a story that climate change and all of this disruption is really the challenge to us to step into a whole new cycle of regeneration. And this is the huge adventure. You know, this is the great challenge of our time, that every single one of us has a role to play, you know, has a calling to be here. And isn't that exciting? Is this, you know, aren't you glad you didn't miss this moment in history? Because this is where it all turns. And you have a role to play in it.
Yeah, so true. I love that in the sense of, you know, we make it so complex, and yet, like you're saying, it can be simple. And if you look at, you know, regeneration and look at it from perspective, things are evolving instead of, you know, the doomsday kind of feeling. They're evolving, and humans have to step up to the plate, which means in our just like you said, our political arena and our social, our financial, everything has to shift. And right now, there's just a lot of fighting back for any those kinds of change. Particularly because we're still, you know, we're in a patriarchal society.
So, I encourage people to think about how do we change stories? How do we change our personal stories? You know, if you have a personal story going on from your childhood or your family, of like, oh, I can't do anything right, or, oh, nothing good ever happens to me. You know, I really always encourage people, like, identify the story. Find some support in changing it. You know, find yourself a circle of women, or women and men, or women and whoever, that, whatever gender. But people who can come together to really support you in shifting your stories to the ones that are going to empower you to engage most deeply with the world and tell those new stories. That's part of the gift of ritual, is the gift of, you know, every ritual is a story that we tell and we enact. So think about how do you create rituals around those negative stories to dissolve them. You know, throw them in the fire, turn them into salt, dissolve them in the ocean, whatever you want to do. Build a sandcastle on the edge of the ocean that represents that story, and let the waves wash it away. Put it into a bunch of old apple cores and peelings, and put it in the compost and let it decay into something positive. And then create something that represents that positive story that you want to tell. And find ways to make it not just in words, but visual and sensual. Surround yourself with it. Find, you know, images of it you can put up on your walls. You know, find objects that represent that story you can put around, so that you surround yourself with the sense of a different possibility.
What you're talking about, what I'm hearing, is using imagination, you know, to guide ourselves into our new culture.
Using imagination, and then finding some way to represent that imagination sensually, not just abstractly and conceptually, but things you can touch and smell and feel. To me, that's also where myth-making and fiction writing come together, because to write fiction, you're really creating a world, and to bring that world alive, you have to describe it in very sensual terms, and things that people can imagine, can hear, can touch, and smell, and that for me is the exciting part of writing, which is one of the things I love to do. I've been working, you know, the last
4 years or so very deeply writing a sequel to a novel I wrote back in the 90s, The Fifth Sacred Saint. And part of that is really creating internally a whole picture of the world and trying to make that live.
Yes, that's exciting. I'm glad you brought that in because I was wanted you to talk about that because I see how, you know, this work with myth plays into your new novel.
Well, one of the reasons I went back to it, you know, partly is we've been working on bringing Fifth Sacred Thing to the screen for quite a long time. It's a long and challenging process. But in doing that, it really came home to me how few images we have in the culture of any kind of positive future. If you look at movies, it's all mess, uplifts, and doom and gloom, and it's all a positive future here on Earth. You have Avatar, but that's out in space. You know, you have Star Trek, which at least sort of postulates a pretty positive Earth future, but most of it takes place in space. And there's not much that gives us hope. You know, they say movies are collective dreams, and it's like we have nothing but collective nightmares about what our future is going to be. How can we create a positive future if we have no stories? See, very, very few stories that tell us it's even a possibility.
Yeah, well, that's great. And we're coming to our end of our time. I know people can still pre-order the book. I'm sure they can go to your website, starhawk.org. Just want to remind people that she will be in Seattle the weekend of November 6th through the 8th. East-West Bookshop, Friday night, Saturday night, the Spiral Dance, and Saturday and Sunday, the workshop, which is around myth. And you can go to Tools for Change for that, womanofwisdom.org, to buy tickets to the Spiral Dance. So thanks so much for being on the call today, Starhawk.
Thanks, Chris. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, and looking forward to having you in Seattle. Thank you. So this is Chris Danis. You're listening to Voices of Women. We're going to come back and talk with Seattle activist Dharna Joshi about how climate solutions can fix more than the climate.
A morning filled with dynamic, inspirational music, spirituality, and uplifting messages by TJ Woodward. Come and connect with community conversations and awaken your senses. Awakened Living Sundays with TJ Woodward. Join TJ every Sunday in the San Francisco Bay Area Chapel at Fort Mason and live streaming online 11 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Pacific Time. To learn more and access the live stream, visit www.awakenedlivingsf.org.
Has asthma or allergies got you singing the raspy blues? Allergy and Asthma Networks is the nation's premier nonprofit patient-centered network of doctors, caregivers, patients, and healthcare professionals who are dedicated to ending death and suffering due to asthma, allergies, and related conditions. Join President and CEO Tanya Winders each month on the Dr. Pat Show to learn more and visit allergyasthmanetwork.org today. Breathe better together with Allergy and Asthma Network.
What would you say if I told you that you could change your life in only 1 hour and all while lying down relaxing? Thousands of people all over the world have. What am I talking about? It's called Access Consciousness The Bars. The Bars is an energetic body process that contains 32 different points on your head that, when run, assist you in releasing decisions about any area of your life that you have made solid and, as a result, cannot change. The Bars is the first class in Access Consciousness, a dynamic set of tools and information designed to transform any area of your life. When you have a Bars session, the worst that can happen is you feel like you had a fantastic massage. The best thing that can happen is your whole life could change. Go to accessconsciousness.com today to find a facilitator to schedule a private session or to find a bars class in your area. Are you willing to give yourself an hour to change your life?
If you're one of the millions of Americans suffering from anxiety, you probably know how powerless and out of control this emotion can make you feel. This is why it is so important to remember that anxiety is created by your mind, which means that you can learn to use your mind to uncreate it. Hello, my name is Dr. Friedman Schaub. My award-winning book, The Fear and Anxiety Solution, provides you with a step-by-step breakthrough process to understand and resolve the root causes of your anxiety and build a solid foundation of confidence and inner peace. If you're ready to take your power back, visit thefearandanxietysolution.com. That's thefearandanxietysolution.com or call 866-903-6463. That's 866-903-MIND.
Welcome back. This is Chris Danis, and we're on Voices of Women today, not Women of Wisdom. I'm so used to saying that because I'm the founder of Women of Wisdom. But I'm speaking now with Zarna Joshi, and she is a writer, storyteller, and has published books about Hindu spirituality, self-examination, and cross-cultural understanding. She leads the Seattle Bhakti Yoga Group and is a community organizer and a world traveler. Zarna is an activist for climate justice and social justice issues, and much of her activism stems from her cultural upbringing as an Indian daughter. And Zarna is going to speak at the Salish Sea Bioneers Conference on Whidbey Island at the Whidbey Institute, and that's November 6th through the 8th. And you can read about that on the WhidbeyInstitute.org website or check out the Facebook page on the Salish Sea Bioneers Conference. And I'll be speaking there, too, about creating a circle structure, infrastructure for organizations to make them more powerful and be inclusive for everybody's voices being part of our processes and our activism. So welcome, Zarna.
Thank you. Thank you, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So first, let's talk about how you got to be active in the climate movement. What drew you to that?
Well, I've always been active in the climate movement since I was very young, growing up in England. It resonates very deeply with me. Obviously, in England also, we have an education system that does not stifle the study of what humans are doing to the earth, unlike the education system in this country, which is deeply, deeply unfortunate for the entire planet. We learned in the 80s about acid rain. We learned in the 80s about the possibility of climate change. As I grew up as a teenager in the 90s, it became more and more clear that it was true. When I went to university in 2000, I was 18 years old, and I went to a conference at The Hague, which was where the Kyoto Protocol talks were going on, and they were the talks that George W. Bush's delegates walked out of. And I was there with activists from all over the world, building a sand dike, because there we are in the Netherlands, which is a country that's going to be underwater in a few years if we don't do something about the rising tides that have been caused by climate change. Except that the Netherlands is a white European country, and this world and this system that we live in is built for white people. It's built for European people, and it is those people who have actually caused all of this destruction by burning the most fossil fuels, by taking from all of these other countries. And so it became very clear to me that we could not rely on politicians, that we could not rely on supposed power structure, because all they care about is money, all they care about is corporations and profit. And, you know, so I started looking deeper into solutions, into local solutions, and into what we as people from all over the world, as people who come from all backgrounds and all races and all religions, could actually talk about and work together to make a difference. And I have found many, many different ideas from all over the world that make a lot of sense and show us that our present system does not work and that we move to, and that we need to move towards a different system.
Yeah, so let's look at, you know, you said you're a Hindu daughter of Indian descent, and so that's your heritage. How has that impacted how you look at these issues and how to resolve the climate issues?
Yeah, so basically within the philosophy of Hinduism, the first thing is that we look upon this earth as our mother. We call her Dharti Ma. Dharti means earth. Ma means mother. Mother Earth. And she is central to our scriptures. Many times when God descends, he descends in order to defend Dharti Ma. He descends in order to protect her from the destruction that humans bring about. And so this is central to many of the teachings, that humans are capable of great and good things, but humans are also capable of terrible destruction, which comes out of our greed. And so that was one of the teachings that I was brought up with that was central to how I was brought up. And it's this idea that as a human, you are incredibly privileged, but as a human, you can also be dangerous to this planet. So whatever you do, make sure that you are serving Mother Earth. Because if you are serving Mother Earth, you are also serving God. That is what God wants. And so that was central to the way I was raised. Another philosophical tenet that was central to the way I was raised was the law of karma. In this country, you all have heard of it. It's as karma. That's actually not how it is pronounced. It's pronounced karma. So the law of karma is that for every action, there is a reaction. And this is, of course, physics. So Hinduism is a very scientific faith. And so we are talking about the idea that whatever you do in this world, whether it is by your thoughts, whether it is by your words, or whether it is by your deeds, that causes reactions in your life and on this planet. And so whatever you do, let it be good. Whatever you do, let it be in service to this earth. Let it be in service to your mother. Because only then will you know that you are actually serving God and that you are actually doing the right thing. Because if you are acting only out of your greed, you will cause destruction. And so those were two things that have been part of the philosophy that I was raised in and that have caused me to go down this path, which is all about protecting the earth and serving Mother Earth as her daughter.
Well, that's great. Yeah, and I want to go back to that's so true of if we're conscious of serving the earth, you know, what is best for the Mother Earth, and then what's best for us. And you were talking about, you know, the corporations, and you know, we have this white culture that's in control, and so to speak, and how do, and yet we're a planet of many colors of people. How do we embrace bringing all these voices together to create change?
So one of the biggest things, of course, is that we have to learn to listen to each other. And in the current paradigm of the environmental movement, what is prevalent is that you have a lot of large NGOs, NGOs meaning non-profit groups, who, you know, bring in lots and lots and lots of money and donations and don't really do a great deal in terms of actual activism. They say that they are, but what they're really doing is taking credit for what a lot of grassroots movements are doing. For example, right now in the Shell No movement, the fact is that you had people, local people, ordinary people, who didn't have any money, who didn't have any, you know, large infrastructure, but they rose up and they took direct action. And we are, you know, and that was all along the West Coast, whether you're talking about from San Francisco all the way up to the Arctic. And we're talking about brown people, black people, native, indigenous peoples, immigrant people. And all of those people rose up, and they didn't do it because they had money. They didn't do it because they had a large NGO and this huge infrastructure. They did it because they knew that if we don't protect the Arctic, we're not going to survive. And if we don't stand up for indigenous rights, we can't stand up for anyone. And the and so that's what they did. But what happened was that this, all of these NGOs, whether you're talking about Sierra Club, Oceana, so many of them, when we won, when we forced Shell to actually get out of the Arctic, all of those NGOs sent out emails claiming victory as if they had actually done something. But the truth is that they hadn't done anything. They didn't even show up. And so instead of listening to each other, they simply took credit for what ordinary people were doing. That is not how we can move forward. That cannot go on. And that needs to be stopped. But the problem is that most of these large NGOs are run by white people who are used to white privilege and who are used to taking the credit for everything, even when they haven't done anything. And that needs to stop. And it needs to stop by people within those NGOs speaking out and changing that paradigm so that the people who are actually doing the work can not only get support from these NGOs, but can actually be listened to correctly as they need to be listened to, and we can move forward with an actual holistic movement that is going to protect this earth, because we are all children of this earth, whether we are brown or black or white or whatever. And so yes, this idea
and I'm
of...
I'm going to need to interrupt you, Zarna, because we're going to need to go to commercial break, but you are right. It's all about listening, and we're going to talk more with Zarna Joshi when we come back after our, after our little break.
The Women of Wisdom Fall Harvest Festival is coming up right around the corner on October 24th from 10:30 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. with free admission located at the North Seattle Community College in the Conference Center. Festivities include a silent auction, healers, educational booths, delicious food, and a variety of vendors. You won't want to miss this fun-filled event. For more information, visit womenofwisdom.org, and we'll see you there.
Enlightening, humorous, and compassionate. Listen live to The Kelly Ballard Show, insight and inspiration from the great beyond. Kelly is a fourth-generation medium and intuitive who covers topics ranging from grief, spirit guides, and listening to your intuition. Kelly can help you get answers and guidance from the other side with a little bit of humor and a lot of healing. Tune in to The Kelly Ballard Show, Thursdays at 1 p.m. Pacific Time here on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Are you ready to thread your life with intuition? Intuit Apparel can help you do just that. This is not just about a piece of clothing. This is about a movement, an awakening, and staying centered in life. Your life. Intuitive and host of the radio show Get Into It, Lynn Brown, was given this image with the intention of a clothing line designed to represent the essence of life itself. Visit intuitapparel.com now and wear your intuition with pride.
In retirement, will you have enough money to live life on your terms? Everyone has retirement questions, so ask Ameriprise financial advisor Jeff Packman about the new Confident Retirement Approach. You and Jeff can break down retirement planning step by step to get the real answers you need. call Jeff Packman, financial advisor, today at 425-453-0272. Office is located at 601 108th Avenue Northeast, Suite 1800, Bellevue, Washington, 98004. The Confident Retirement Approach is not a guarantee of future financial results. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor. Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member of FINRA and SIPC.
Let the transition begin. Tune in to the hit show, Majestic Insights Radio, Success for Life's Transitions, with host Carrie Keith. Carrie is a gifted intuitive coach, healer, and teacher who will lead you through her empowering techniques of ancient wisdom and awareness so you can live your happiest, healthiest, and most vibrant life. Let Carrie teach you the tools of transformation that will help you experience success for all of life's transitions. To learn more about Carrie, visit www.majesticinsights.com.
Welcome back to Voices of Women. I am talking with Zarna Joshi today. And Zarna, could you share how people can get in touch with you? I know you don't have a website yet for you personally, but you are on very active in many places. But maybe Facebook might be the best.
So on Facebook, my Women of Color Speak Out group has a Facebook page, and that is WOC Speak Out, so people can look for us there. We will also shortly be bringing our website live online. Is not yet ready, but when that is ready, then it will be womenofcolorspeakout.com. So that's how people can look for us. We're also on livestream.com, and our channel is Women of Color Speak Out there. And people can also go to the Seattle channel and find our town hall, the event that we did back in July, which was a Seattle town hall event. And the Seattle channel film that, and it is people can view it online. So that's how they can catch us. We also have an email address, which is communityclimateaction@gmail.com.
Okay, great. Well, we were just talking about the Shall Know and how it was individuals, and it was a grassroots effort. And I think what's important to hear here is that for change to truly happen is for individuals to stand up for what they believe in, to get active and make their voices heard, and it's all about listening and to come into collaboration with the NGOs who have the money and have the support, but for everybody to be listening to each other. And so the NGOs, just what you're talking about, the NGOs need to listen to what are the people asking for, what are we wanting, what are we seeing, what's out there, to work together on this. We need a little more involvement on all levels.
Well, you know, so what it is that when you say individual people, what it really was individual people who came together in unity. That's what needs to happen. You know, we can all each individually do little things, but together we can do big things, which is what we did in Shall Know. And the problem with NGOs is that they have lots and lots of money, but they dilute the message, because they make compromises that don't need to be made. And that is the reason why for decades and decades and decades, nothing has actually been done on the national level or on the international level. And it's only in the last 2 years, really, that we're starting to see great strides. And the reason why is because the people, not an NGO, not a non-profit group which has got masses of money, but the people in unity are coming together, and they are saying no compromise. Mother Earth is too important, and we need to listen to the indigenous people. We need to listen to the global south, because those are the people that are suffering first and the most, and have been suffering for decades. And it is incompatible with the idea of unity. It is incompatible with the idea of equality. It is incompatible with the idea of racial justice to keep ignoring them. And therefore, we must be listening to them. We do not need to be listening to NGOs. The NGOs need to be listening to us. And if they're not going to listen to us, then they need to get out of the way so that the people can actually do the work that needs to be done. Because the fact is that the only people who really have been doing the work has been the people. It hasn't been the NGOs, no matter how many victories they try to claim. And that's really unfortunate, considering the resources they have, considering the money they have. And instead, you know, when those resources could be going to the grassroots level, where all of the work is actually being done, instead, it's the NGOs who are claiming all of those resources and then doing nothing with it and just paying themselves and perpetuating themselves over and over again. And so that's a big problem. But what we really need to be doing is we need to be listening to Indigenous peoples here in this on this continent. We need to be listening to the Indigenous peoples of India, of China, of the many nations within Africa, of the many nations in the Far East and South America. All of these people are people who have suffered massive climatic disasters. They suffered floods. They suffered droughts. They're suffering from famine. And they are the ones who are actually looking at local-based, natural solutions, like when it comes to building, like when it comes to conserving water, like when it comes to protecting the forest, when it comes to diet and food and agriculture and food growth and plant-based diets. These are the people who have actually been going back to indigenous roots and natural methods of living in harmony with the planet, learning from the earth in how to actually conserve energy and how to consume energy, as opposed to just taking and taking and taking, which is the white Western model, which is what has created all of this destruction. We need to be looking at indigenous methods and indigenous wisdom, much of which is female wisdom. It is a woman's wisdom. Many of these cultures ask the women what should be done. And that is where the best wisdom comes from, because this earth is a mother and we need to be listening to her. And so that is where we're really going to find solutions, and that's where we're really going to be making a difference.
Well, I can't agree with you more, and especially around the voices of women, because that's what I do, to empower women to, you know, work together to share our voices and be heard. You know, we have silenced ourselves for so long that it's time to be speaking up and go into leadership like you have. You know, getting your voices heard and working together of all cultures, all colors. Your statement, like the name of this interview, was called "How Climate Solutions Can Fix More Than Climate." So, reading between the lines, what I'm hearing is, we work on these climate solutions, we're going to learn how to work together. We're going to learn how to listen to each other. We're going to learn a lot more that's going to fix all the other, you know, lots of issues around this issue of climate.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the climate movement really is a solidarity movement. It's a movement that is talking about racial justice, is talking about is talking about equality, is talking about the wisdom of women, it's talking about indigenous rights, and in many ways it's talking about living with nature. It's you know, how to eat in a way that is in harmony with nature, because that is also in harmony with our bodies. Our bodies are not separate from nature. Our bodies have come from nature. Therefore, we need to be learning from nature about how to actually feed ourselves. And instead of that, all we're doing is thinking, how can I consume more? How can I make more money? How can I enjoy more? Even though sickness and health and disease is not necessarily enjoyment, but we've been taught that, it doesn't matter if you hurt your body as long as you enjoy. That is a Western construct.
Yeah, we need to change that our whole structure in that regard. And anyway, I want to thank you for being on the show today. We're running out of time. We could talk forever on this topic with you. So thank you so much. I just want people to know that Zarna is speaking at the Salish Sea Diners Conference, November 6th through the 8th, at the Whidbey Institute. You can sign up today. Just go to woodsyinstitute.org. And also, remember, Starhawk is in town November 6th through the 8th. And we'll be doing a spiral dance with Woman of Wisdom at North Seattle College on November 7th.
You've been listening to Voices of Women with Chris Stainis. Tune in each Friday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time for Voices of Women Today. Radio with Chris Stainis.